and welcome to Better Connected, a Bose series. I'm your host, Justin O'Connor. In this series, Bose welcomes special guests as they explore how to foster deeper human connections. In our first episode, I'm thrilled to welcome Diana Cowan, who you may know as Physics Girl. To date, Physics Girl's YouTube channel has over 2 million subscribers. It's where she explains complex scientific concepts and phenomena in an engaging, down-to-earth way. So without any further ado, Diana Cowan. Hi, Diana. Thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat.
I am excited too. I've been watching you for a while, and I'm looking forward to this. And speaking of watching you, your YouTube channel, Physics Girl, what was the motivation behind getting that started?
There's sort of two answers that I give when I talk about starting the channel. One of them is that I was always interested in science communication, and that's eventually what the channel became, is a science channel. But when I first started the channel, I actually started it as a series of 101 things to do with a physics degree.
And when you first started, were you also juggling that with work in academic fields?
I was. When I first started my channel, I think I had just finished up working as an astrophysics researcher, and I was just going into a software engineering job. So like none of these sound like science communication. I was coding at General Electric when I first started the channel and made those first videos. And then after that, went on to work at a science museum. And then I drove for Lyft, and I was like handing out promotions of juice and things. Like, I was doing, none of this was linear. There was no linearity to my career path. But there's something to be said for that. I think when I was working on the channel and trying to sort of have all these other jobs going at the same time, it was because I was feeling so unsure of whether the science communication route would actually work out.
And it's obviously been pretty successful for you with over 2 million subscribers. And with all those people watching you, you're undoubtedly inspiring people about science and building their passion. Where did your passion for science start?
Well, I hope I'm inspiring people into science. I'm sort of just trying to copy the people who inspired me, which was my physics teachers and my parents and all the people who encouraged me to ask a lot of questions about the world and, you know, question everything, but in a positive way. So thinking back to when I was a kid, I grew up in Hawaii. So I was really lucky that we really had the whole world to play in. We would always, you know, we would come home and we had this is going to sound so ridiculous, but we had a waterfall down the road from our house. So we would go to the waterfall and we would find little tadpoles. And then at night, my parents were really good at making sure we would go outside and look at the stars, because it was always a beautiful, clear view from up there if it wasn't raining, which it usually was. But we would be able to see the Milky Way. And if there was a meteor shower happening, they would be like, let's go out and see. And we'd see like the streaks across the sky.
So it sounds like you had a natural curiosity, and also that the environment you grew up in, you had things that were literally in front of you, like tadpoles and also the stars. How much is curiosity a part of all of this for you?
Oh my gosh. I try not to emphasize just straight curiosity. Well, I do. I think I'm all about curiosity, but I think all of us science communicators, we're always saying like, it's all about curiosity. It's all about curiosity. And we're just slamming that same message down. But the reason why is because that's what it's all about. So I'm always trying to find my own unique way to express that curiosity really is what drives interest and ultimately success in science, is really having that strong desire to answer questions about the world.
And you mentioned other science communicators. So you've cited, of course, Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye as inspirations. What was it about the two of them that that you found interesting, or that you borrowed, or, you know, emulated?
I think everybody remembered Bill Nye, and everyone my age, like we all watched him in class. I just remember them like rolling out that VHS player with the TV, and there's Bill Nye. And I mean, I don't remember exactly how he communicated, but like what sticks with me even from childhood is he was, you know, like smashing windows with a bowling ball, or I don't know. He just always had this goofy excitement and enthusiasm. And I think that's super, super contagious. The excitement is, I actually, I give talks to teachers every once in a while, and this is very something that I would do, but I researched whether my instinct about, you know, emotions being contagious is real. And I found all these papers on emotional contagion because I wanted to be like, no, 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 this is science-based. And it is, like, it's true that when you have a certain emotion and you express it to someone, they will take on that emotion as well. So when Bill Nye is just so excited, and when Neil expresses his wonder about the universe, like, it's really contagious. And I think that's one thing I've tried to take on into my videos, is to capture that moment when I legitimately, honestly go, oh my God, that's so cool. And that's the biggest challenge, is taking that moment, that genuine moment, and then capturing it in video when it's maybe not happening exactly. Maybe I'm not filming exactly when I learned something and I had that moment. But yeah, I think they're, the emotion that they present with is probably what I found the most effective.
Yeah. And that contagion and that fun and wonder that they convey, that really is a part of what makes them who they are. I've been watching your channel for years, and what has always struck me is the storytelling aspect. And that's a big, I think, hallmark of what you do. And it's obviously, you're using it to distill complex concepts to an audience that you can't interact with. But to bring it around to our audience who's watching this, who are not YouTube YouTube creators, how would you advise someone who in the workplace and having to communicate remotely with their team members or the people that work for them or who they work for, how would you advise people to utilize storytelling when dealing with complex matters?
Yeah. I mean, I'm honestly so, I'm thankful that you say that about my videos, because storytelling as a concept is something I've actually been really, really focusing on more lately. Just like that concept in general as a tool for science communication, because the videos I started making, I was like, I just want to talk about how holograms work, and I'm going to describe it, and almost like an instructional video. But now I think, what I'm moving more towards is wanting people to really feel what it's like to be excited about science. And some of that comes from not necessarily telling my story, but telling stories from the past, where we're talking about, you know, when Copernicus first discovered something about the universe, or when Hubble made the discovery that there are galaxies outside of our galaxy. I like to look at those as a story, like look at what he was going through, what Hubble was going through. And he saw this thing, and it was sort of a mystery. And I always like approaching science as a mystery and telling it like a mystery story, in the same way you would with Sherlock Holmes. And I think that really taking the human experience of a story and putting it into science makes it so much more understandable and also memorable. Like, humans just love stories, you know, it's hard to deny that. So why would you not use that as a tool in science explanations or in any kind of media where you're really trying to get someone to remember, to understand, and then also to feel something as well?
Would you say that feeling something is really a very strong part of the communication of complex topics?
not always, but I think I've realized over time that that when I set out to start doing science communication, part of the reason why was, I, you know, everyone likes to share what they're interested in. And I would look at my sister, who's a professional dancer. Like, she is so different from me. She got her degree in dance and performing arts. And when she would share the stuff that that she worked on, like her, you know, final dance recital that she choreographed, it was so easy for us to go experience that and to go watch it. But science doesn't have that same, like science doesn't tell its own story. So you have to tell a story for science. And I think that involves feeling something like, unless you just want to understand what's going on, if you want to really have the full sense for what science can offer, and that's advancing society and providing us things to providing us, you know, modern medicine to help people, like that all involves human stories. And so for me, it's become a lot more important in what I do in communicating science because of my personal goal, which is wanting to share this experience of being excited about something, specifically science.
And so we've talked a lot about YouTube, and you don't have feedback. You don't have instant feedback when you're creating the story or telling the story. But you do other things than YouTube. Tell us some of the other things you're doing, and particularly when you have that live feedback, what kind of response do you get to your approach?
Oh man. So we do a lot of other, things besides just YouTube. So we're, you know, constantly sharing things on the different social platforms, TikTok and Instagram and stuff like that. One of my favorite things that these platforms provide is the feedback tools. So like there's, you know, you ask a question like, what's your favorite documentary you've seen? And people will respond. And then you can get maybe ideas from that or get inspiration for something else. And then I've always done a lot of talks in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, but that's become a lot more difficult since COVID. So we've had to transition on and going remote with our talks and doing live talks, but virtually, obviously. And we have made it work. We've continued on, and we spoke to the Bakersfield School District, all 3,000 kids that did their after school program. And we've done a couple other like tech conferences. So we've just had to adapt the approach a little bit. We do get to do other things. Like we get to fire the ping pong cannon in here. And that is, it's probably better to do that in here where I'm not risking any children. So there are some advantages too, but yeah, it's definitely been a challenge.
And so you talked about technology, and obviously technology has been a big part of what you do as a content creator. How did your relationship to communication technology change with the pandemic?
I got more frustrated with the low quality webcam on my 5-year-old laptop. So that was one thing. We adapted some of the presentations we did by taking, you know, the camera we usually film with and connecting that into the computer in order to do like different kinds of live streams where we could move around and have a little bit of versatility. I wore headphones so much more because working in a house with roommates, everybody, you could even hear through the walls as everybody's having their own conference calls with all our teams across the world. So a nice set of headphones made a big difference. Yeah, I'd say I relied on more of the quality of the tech.
I think one of the other hallmarks of your style is your converse. It's so conversational. Like I'm talking to you now, and it feels very much like also watching one of your videos. So maybe that's something that our viewers could take away. Like if they have a really big presentation coming up or something more than just an ordinary meeting, so to speak, practicing it, trying it on other people sounds like probably some good advice.
Absolutely. I think there's something so different in your brain. I'm not a psychologist, but I would bet a lot of money that there's something so different in your brain from sitting down and typing or from writing down on a paper and actually speaking to somebody. And I don't just mean speaking out loud to yourself. I mean, speaking to someone. It's almost like it takes your focus away from, like, brings you out of your own head.
And so then let's talk about the pandemic. Things shut down for a lot of people, and a lot of us found that we lost certain types of engagement we were used to. And with having those meetings, obviously, that's one of the ways you got yourself through it. Were there also specific things about those meetings? Did you conduct them differently than you might have?
Yes, yes. I would say that we, the remote meetings were a little more structured than our normal meetings. It wasn't sort of like, what are you working on the rest of today? It was like, let's talk more in a more structured way. What exactly is happening this week and next week and through the month? What are you specifically working on? Like keeping up with each other, because we can't just be like, hey, can I ask you about a thing? And I know what we're all working on when we're in the office, because we need things from each other, but there's so much more distance, literally, when you're working remotely and you're apart from each other. So you lose that easy connect where you organically check in on what's going on. So we made an effort to make sure everyone knew what's happening this week. What's the schedule? What is everyone needing to get done? And how is everyone doing?
I think that's a good one at the end. How is everyone doing? Did your team respond to that? Was that helpful for them?
I knew, you know, I hired people because I knew I didn't work well alone, and I needed that human contact in order to sort of feel good about what I'm doing day to day. And I'm not doing all of this in isolation, and I'm getting feedback on the work that we're doing. And I think that those meetings made me feel a lot more grounded. They made me feel a lot more, a lot less alone when the world made everyone isolate. But you have a virtual meeting, and it takes a little bit of the edge off of the loneliness that came with the pandemic.
And you have a unique perspective, because you had worked from home and you knew you didn't like it. And when you had a choice, you didn't do it. And then obviously you were forced to work from home. So what were some of the things you did to manage kind of that? I think we all experienced it, that like, I live and work in the same space and it's not great.
Yeah. I mean, some people actually really like that. Like they like the fact that your commute is 3 feet from the bed to the desk, and you're still wearing PJs from here down, so nobody can tell. And there's something I do like about that. So some mornings, especially when you, you maybe want to start a load of laundry, you've been behind on things, or I have to stay home to meet with somebody doing construction on the house. So there are benefits to having the freedom to work from home, and also, you know, making sure you're doing it effectively, checking in and stuff. But being forced to work from home, I think the thing, you know, I did feel lucky in that I have roommates, so I wasn't completely alone. The other ways I think I sort of coped was making sure I got out of the house a lot more than I ever had before. I think that was also a big deal, was just getting outside, making sure that your tech and your virtual interactions are as quality as possible, but then making sure that you're getting away from those and hitting up the sidewalk outside.
But a lot of people had to suddenly enter a tech realm just to do their jobs. What are some tips and tricks for people who are maybe still not, like, what would be an approach to, I don't know, bettering somebody's relationship to technology if they're still struggling with it?
I would say to myself and to anyone out there to keep it simple, just like really what you need, fewer moving parts and pieces. Yeah, I should have done that. Now I know.
So, I don't know, maybe certain pieces of technology that have an all-in-one solution might be a valuable tool. Again, for our audience, people who may have to do that, especially virtually, what are some other thoughts about ways to connect with people?
I think that the way that I approach talking to many people on a channel is the same way that I approach just talking to a few people. So I struggle when I'm filming by myself to pretend that I'm talking to just a couple people. But I think filming by myself versus talking in front of a crowd, I take the same approach, which is that I imagine I'm only talking to maybe 1 to 3 other people and having a much more personal conversation with them. And I think that's the best approach, because it keeps it the most human. I think even when you get to a crowd of, you know, we've had meetups here and there with with subscribers of the channel where there's maybe 10 people. And when there's one or two, you're having a conversation and they're like, oh, I like this video. And you're like, oh yeah, let me tell you about what happened behind the scenes there. And there's a back and forth there that's so fun and so human.
And when you're speaking to a live audience that's large, you no longer have that actual one-to-one conversation. Because you talked about how one-to-one conversation is how you do your story building. And what we're really talking about here, one of the themes we want to talk about is like breaking down complex concepts. So when you're talking to a large group, are you able to, do you think that way? Like, how do I break this down? Is that happening like in real time for you?
So I do, I even presenting to a room full of people, I still do think about it. Like, how can I help everyone listening feel like they're having a conversation with me in some way? So that, you know, that could be bringing up a volunteer, or that could be like, okay, I have a few questions, like the thing you would do in a conversation to make sure the person's on the same page as you, where you're asking like, how many of you have heard of a muon, and you see hands raised, and maybe you'll pick on someone and be like, what have you heard about it? And just hearing from someone else in the audience that they're with you having your same experience is so impactful and so powerful, like sort of represents a voice that is more yours, because I'm up there and I'm talking and I, you know, it's presumed that I'm coming in with more physics knowledge or knowledge of whatever I'm presenting on.
So how would you say that video enables storytelling and is a valuable tool for storytelling?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of some examples with the videos we've shot that we could not have shot without the visuals and the audio. I mean, one video that comes to mind is when we went and visited CERN. We went to the Large Hadron Collider, like this just insane, impressive, massive scientific facility. While you're there, you know, you're getting the combination of someone telling you what you're seeing and learning information and learning about science you never knew, but you're also getting that story of this scientist taking you to their experiment. They're like, yeah, this is the top secret door that I go through, and this is the door I have to shut in order to block off the radiation from that beam when they turn it on. Like, you're getting the experience of the science from hearing what they're saying. Meanwhile, you're seeing these visuals of this just incredible, impressive set of, you know, it's a bunch of metal and wires and everything, but the scale of it is so just, it's amazing. You know, it's a feat of human knowledge and creativity. And I think video really allows you to present that from so many different angles.
And that kind of engagement is obviously a big part of communicating these concepts. But I have to ask you, have you ever had an experience where maybe with a virtual audience, you realized you maybe weren't getting that engagement? Like it wasn't working. And what did you do to pivot?
Oh, yes. So in some of the recent virtual talks that we've done, I can every once in a while see some of the kids that are watching. So we did this talk with the Bakersfield School District where there were 3,000 kids watching, some in a classroom, and they're too small to see. But every once in a while, the video would cycle through to these different kids, and they're sitting, you know, on their bed or something, and they're little, like they're, you know, 7 or 8 years old, and they're sitting there maybe like staring off into space or swiveling in their chair. And I know I've lost them. And sometimes they're glued to the screen, which is great to see. But every time one of the kids would come through, they'd be maybe one of them I would lose. And I realized, okay, this is so hard. If I were there in person and I were able to throw cats at them and like ask questions and do a little experiment here, and they get to smell what it's like, and they get to see it, like the vortex ring go across the crowd, it's something completely different. But when I'm there live, I realize every time I'm talking for more than a minute or two, I've lost a child. So I had to pivot, and I think I sped up some of the words, and I took more time emphasizing the experiments that we were doing and more time to ask the kids questions, and they could participate through their teachers. So I focused a little bit more on those things that are interactive, that make sure that the kids are, they're participating, not just by listening.
So this is probably something a lot of us have experienced, especially through the pandemic and being remote, whether it's personally or professionally, we're trying to communicate and we can tell that we're losing our audience or maybe one. And so it sounds like you would tell people to engage in interaction, or at the very least, maybe stop talking and give other people a chance to talk.
Some of the best presentations involve listening. It's counterintuitive. Someone asks you to talk and present, and your instinct is just to be like, oh, I have to say all these things and I have to say them right. And you're so focused on that, you forget there are people listening to you that are experiencing it. And so putting yourself in their shoes, figuring out where they're at, even live. I've had to adjust talks sometimes when I come in and I think I'm presenting to a certain audience, but I start to ask some questions at the beginning and I'm like, oh, they have a lot more or a lot less knowledge about a certain thing I was going to talk about, but I would have probably lost them if I hadn't checked in on that and had a little bit of interaction from the get-go.
Okay. So, and we're talking about science communication here. And so I do want to ask, the scientific community has obviously had to take a very public role in the pandemic. What advice would you give to members of the science, like you've talked to other members of the science community about scientific communication? We might have some people listening who are, they're on the forefront of communicating science concepts. What advice would you give to somebody who's not used to doing that and has to convey complex or even, life or death information to an audience that's digestible?
The advice that I used to give to scientists was to find the medium that you like the best and you enjoy using the most. And I think that's actually truer than ever because there's so many more opportunities, there's so many more tools to use. That's the advice that I would give. Is to find what you like to do, find the platform that you like the most, find the type of content that you enjoy making.
Well, Diana, this has been a real joy for me. As I mentioned at the beginning, I've watched you for years and it really feels like I'm as close as I'm going to get to being in a Physics Girl YouTube video. It's been really enjoyable and obviously conversational. And I just want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I snuck a little bit of cosmology in there. So, check. I did my job.
Thank you for joining us today, Diana, and to all of our viewers out there in the digital world. This has been Better Connected with Bose, and I've been your host, Justin O'Connor. I look forward to seeing you next time.